Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This episode is going to be a little bit different than anything and everything I've ever done before on the podcast. And basically, to give you some backstory, my buddy Tony and I were talking, and he gave me an idea. He said, I think it would be a good idea for you to give a little bit more insight into your past and your history, whether it's in relation to your fitness, your nutrition, your strength training, your business. Give a little bit more insight into not only who you are today, but how you arrived at who you are today. What are some of the struggles that you've been through to help you get to where you are today? And I liked that idea, and I'd love to hear what you think about it in the comments, or just let me know, shoot me a message, because I think it's very easy for people to look at where someone is now, and equally as important, where people perceive someone to be now, right? So someone might look at someone with a large social media following. Someone might look at someone who has a very low body fat and a great deal of muscle mass and might be a very high level lifter. They might look at just where they are and not understand what they went through in order to achieve that. Not to mention, when you look at just where you perceive someone to be, it's very easy to overlook a lot of the struggles they're going through, right? This is sort of the highlight reel that people talk about. You only see the highlight reel of people's lives on social media. I do think there are some people, and I try to be one of them, who are more open and honest and candid with the things they're going through and not just showing the highlight reel. That being said, I think it's very difficult on both ends. I think it's difficult as a content creator to go out of your way to really show the 100% truth. And I think it's also very difficult from a consumer perspective, because when you're watching what someone you admire does, it's very easy to block out what might be perceived as negative and to really only see what might be perceived as positive, to see how many likes they're getting on social media, to see how they can eat certain foods without any fear or anxiety or worry, to see how much weight they can lift on a barbell seemingly effortlessly without any issues. When the reality is there's so much underneath the surface, there's so much to that backstory, both in the past and also in the present, that isn't really discussed. So in this episode, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about the struggles that I've had with my own nutrition in the past. I mean, nutrition and fitness, but I think really we're going to start here with my nutrition. I do a lot of this with people that I interview, especially my inner circle members who I interview all the time on this podcast, which is really probably the majority of what I do here. I get inner circle members on the podcast and I try and help them with whatever they're struggling with, whatever they're going through. And the response to that has been nothing short of extraordinary over the last few years. And I sincerely appreciate your support. In this episode, like I said, this is going to be a little bit more about me, just being as honest as I can and as forthright as I can about things that I've gone through to hopefully give you some perspective. And one of the things I hope you'll gain from this is, as you'll see, I didn't always have a wonderful relationship with food and nutrition at all, especially if you've seen a lot of my YouTube videos about it. You know, I used to struggle with binge eating and disordered eating, and I'll get into it in a minute, but one of the main messages I hope you take from this podcast, and hopefully this series of podcasts if you end up liking it, is that the sort of the cliche saying that our struggles develop our strengths, right? It's because of our struggles, it's because of what we go through that allows us to become stronger and more resilient if you allow it to. And that's really the most important part of this, right? It's if you allow your struggles to develop your strengths. One of the major issues I see among many people is allowing their struggles to define them and using a struggle as a justification to not try at all. So with that being said, I'm going to start off with intermittent fasting. And I'm going to start with intermittent fasting because for whatever reason, right now, it seems to be a pretty significant fad. But what's important to understand about that is intermittent fasting has been around for years and years and years, popularized, I would at this point say, about 20 years ago. It's 2020 right now. So the first times that I started to see it were the early 2000s, popularized by, number one, a guy named Ori Hofmeckler, who started with the Warrior Diet, and I'll talk about that in a second, and then popularized by another man named Martin Birkin, and he really popularized the 16 and 8 method, where you fast for 16 hours, and then you have an 8-hour feeding window. Now, the reason that I want to make it clear that this isn't a new thing is because it might have just cropped up in your social media feed. Maybe a friend mentioned it, maybe you saw it on social media, and it's being addressed or being marketed as this new way to lose fat that is special and unique and optimal. And it's not. Intermittent fasting is simply just sometimes you eat and sometimes you don't. A more simple way to look at it is you skip breakfast. That's literally all intermittent fasting is. Now, when I first started intermittent fasting, I was, I believe, 16 or 17 years old, and it was at the suggestion of my wrestling coach at the time. And he was doing the Warrior Diet by Ori Hofmeckler. Now, this was in about 2007, I believe. Yeah, it was about 2007. I was either a sophomore or junior in high school. And one of the reasons my wrestling coach had suggested it is because he had misinterpreted it to be something that was optimal for fat loss. Now, the other thing about this method, and I'll explain it in a second, is that intermittent fasting, it's very enticing, especially for people who struggle with self-control and portion control, I should say even more precisely. What a lot of the intermittent fasting proponents talk about is how, well, you don't eat earlier in the day and then you can eat as much as you want at night. And that sounds very, very enticing, especially for people who struggle with binge eating and who struggle with portion control, because a lot of the people who struggle with binge eating and portion control, they're either eating nothing at all or eating so much it hurts. So now you hear about this method, intermittent fasting, that makes it seem as though you can literally eat as much as you want as long as it's within a set time frame. Now, this actually can turn out to be a very, very bad thing for people who struggle with binge eating and disordered eating. It's not bad for everyone, but when he first recommended it to me, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. He was like, yeah, listen, you have a 20-hour fasting window. This is the Warrior Diet by Ori Hofmeckler, which I do not recommend for anybody. Every day, you fast for 20 hours. You don't eat for 20 hours. You just have coffee, water, tea for 20 hours. And then you have a 4-hour, quote unquote, feeding window, or just eating window, if you want to use regular words, which you can eat literally as much as you want. And I remember the first time my coach told me that, I laughed. And I laughed because it was like a weight was being lifted off my shoulders. I did that nervous laughter, like, I can't believe this is actually real. I can't believe this is a thing that I can literally eat as much as I want in 4 hours and have it not be a problem. And not only have it not be a problem, but I can still lose fat. I can still get stronger. I can still maintain a high level of performance. I can still build muscle. And my coach had literally just started doing it. He was someone I looked up to immensely, and he was losing weight very, very quickly. And I was like, oh my God, this must be it. This must be the key. So I started doing it. And of course, initially, when I first started doing the Warrior Diet, I started to lose fat. Why? Well, because I was fasting for 20 hours a day, and there was only so much food that I could fit into my stomach in 4 hours. So initially, I lost a considerable amount of fat. The issue is your body will adapt to whatever it is you do. It could be in strength training, could be nutrition, and your body will learn how to adapt to that situation. So what happened is, well, at the beginning, I was only able to fit so much food in that four-hour window. My stomach began to expand, and I began to eat way more food in 4 hours than a human should be able to. And it got to the point where I literally wasn't able to feel full no matter how much I ate. But here's the issue. I had now just lost a considerable amount of fat doing intermittent fasting, doing this Warrior Diet approach, 20-hour fasting, 4-hour eating. And as a result of seeing that progress, I thought that was the only way to lose fat. It was the only way. It was the right way. It was the optimal way. And just from seeing those results, really for the first time in my life, I thought anything else wouldn't work. And any other method would not only not work, but it would cause me to lose my progress and cause me to get fat. And so then what happened was, because of the initial progress that I made, the initial fat loss that I made, and then the subsequent grounding in my beliefs where I would dig my heels in, and out of a fear of losing my progress, I went further and further and further into this intermittent fasting world in which I would try and restrict even more. I would maybe extend my fasting phase. I would extend from 20 hours to 21 hours or 21 to 22 hours, trying to reduce my feeding phase, trying to reduce the amount of time I could spend eating to again try and essentially use the benefits of this protocol that would hopefully allow me to lose fat, rather than looking at this from a logical point of view, keeping in mind I was only 17 at the time or so, rather than looking at this from the perspective of, okay, you know what, maybe this isn't working for me. Clearly it worked at the beginning, but it's not working for me now. Rather than looking at that, my emotions took over and I became very scared and very nervous that this was the only way to lose fat and I must do it or else nothing is going to work. And you can see this all over the fitness industry. You can see this with people on the keto diet. They'll eliminate any and all carbohydrates. They'll lose fat very, 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 very quickly. And then sooner or later, eventually, they start to plateau. They aren't losing weight anymore. But because they lost so much weight up front, they get nervous and they get worried and they think, well, this is the only way to do it. It must be the only way to do it. So there's no way in hell I'm going to have carbs again. So they restrict, they restrict, they restrict until they binge, they gain a lot of weight. And then they think, well, the only way that I've lost weight so far is through eliminating carbs. So this is what I must do. And I fell into that exact same cycle with intermittent fasting. And the idea of not intermittent fasting scared the hell out of me. Keeping in mind, for the vast majority of my life, I had eaten breakfast. And especially when I was competing at a high level in wrestling, the vast majority of my career, I had eaten breakfast. I was very lean. So logically, if someone had asked me, and they didn't at the time, but logically, if someone had asked me, listen, you've eaten breakfast your whole life. Why are you all of a sudden scared about it? If someone had asked me that, I would have been able to probably see more early on this fear was unjustified. But because I wasn't having that conversation, because that no one was there for me like I'm trying to be there for people now, I fell deeper and deeper into this trap of thinking intermittent fasting was essential. Now, there's even more to this story and a little bit more in detail in regard to this specific method and approach. Ori Hofmeckler, in his Warrior Diet book, he gave essentially lists of foods that are okay and foods that are not okay. He had good foods and bad foods. And I'll never forget this, because if you've listened to my story before, I started interning at a gym when I was 14 years old. And I'll never forget that around 17, when I was at the gym, I was in the staff room and I was reading the book. And while I was reading the book, I was eating a bag of grapes. And I turned the page of the book, and this was in the section of the book where he was outlining what foods were okay and what foods were not okay. And in the section of the book of foods that were not okay, one of the first mentions was grapes. And literally, I'm eating a bag of grapes as I'm reading the book, and my jaw drops. I just have this sinking feeling in my gut. And I remember throwing the grapes away because I just thought, what am I doing? I'm ruining my progress. I am literally eating a food that this man says in his book right now is not okay for fat loss because of the insulin spike as a result of the grapes. And I remember, I'll never forget throwing the grapes away and thinking, what am I doing? Today is ruined. I ruined all of my progress because of the grapes. And this is something that a lot of people will see now on my social media, me talking about how fruit doesn't make you fat, sugar doesn't make you fat, insulin doesn't make you fat, because no one has ever gotten fat from eating grapes. No one has ever gotten fat from eating watermelon. No one has ever gotten fat from eating strawberries. It's never happened in the history of the world. But I vividly remember, it will be something I remember until the day I die, looking at that bag of grapes as though I had just inhaled a bag of poison and I had ruined everything. Now, looking back and in hindsight, it's very easy for me to be like, wow, what an idiot, that was stupid. But I want to be very candid with you that going through this has allowed me to become a much better coach. And it's allowed me to understand things on a much more insightful level. I can empathize with people much more easily. And had I not gone through this, I don't think I would have as good of a relationship with food as I do now. Because it's taken me going through these outrageously strict and rigid and unprecedented protocols in order to arrive at where I am now. But again, as like I was saying in the beginning, it's all based on me being able, on me going out of my way to allow my struggles to develop my strengths. And I'll go into this right now, because essentially, intermittent fasting was what initiated my binge eating disorder. And it's not difficult to see why or how when you restrict all day, and then you save up as many calories as you possibly can for nighttime, and then you eat as much as you can until like your stomach just feels like it's going to be completely overflowing until you just keep eating and eating and eating. This is binging and restricting over and over and over again, and that is essentially what many people do with intermittent fasting. It's why those who struggle with binge eating or portion control are drawn to intermittent fasting, and it's why they're very scared to stop intermittent fasting, because they don't like the idea of not being able to eat as much as they possibly can at nighttime. And I struggled with this for years, all the way into college, and I'll never forget, after having spent a number of years, all the way from high school wrestling until I took a year off after high school and I spent the year in Israel, and then I came back to the United States and I went to college, and I spent about the first semester of my college really struggling with binge eating. And I remember going back to my mom's house over winter vacation, and it was in her apartment, and I just vividly remember whenever she would go to bed, because it was just me and her. My brother lived in California. He still lives in California. And it was just her and I in her apartment. And after she would go to bed, I would go to the kitchen and I would binge eat. And I'd eat an incredible amount of food. And I would feel so guilty and so awful about it. And I wanted to stop. And all day, every day leading up to that, I'd say, I'm not going to do that this time. I'm not going to binge eat. I'm not going to binge eat. And then every night I would binge eat. So I remember one night just having enough of it and just being so tired of it and so ashamed of myself, because what happened was, I'm remembering more and more as I'm telling the story. I remember I was back at home at my mom's place, and my friends had asked me if I wanted to go out to get ice cream with them. And I told them no. These are friends that I hadn't seen in months. They asked me, did I want to go get ice cream with them? I said, no, absolutely not. And I came up with some sort of cockamamie excuse as to why I couldn't. But the reality is I wouldn't go get ice cream with them because I didn't want to ruin my progress, because I didn't want to gain fat, because I thought that ice cream was inherently bad for you. So I didn't go get ice cream with them. But meanwhile, several hours later, once my mom went to bed, I went in the kitchen and I had thousands of calories on a binge. Now, if I had just went to get ice cream with my friends and had an ice cream cone like a normal human, then it would have been fine. It would have been several hundred calories and not a big deal. But instead of going and enjoying ice cream with my friends, I stayed home by myself and then binged later on my own in my kitchen, and no one knew about it. And I remember just being like, what am I doing? What is going on here? What point in my life am I at where I can't even enjoy an ice cream with my friends, but meanwhile I can go in my mom's kitchen and have an entire sleeve of bagels? It was ridiculous. So I remember I went into my mom's bathroom when she wasn't there, into my mom's bathroom, I looked myself in the mirror, and I was like, this is it. I'm done. No more binging. And I had to come up with a strategy in order to make sure I wouldn't do that anymore. And so I remember I said to myself, you're eating breakfast. Starting tomorrow morning, you're eating breakfast. And it might sound ridiculous. It might sound like, okay, cool, big deal, you ate breakfast. But it was a huge deal, because I had spent years at this point intermittent fasting, years saving all of my calories during the day to eat as much as I possibly could at night. And essentially, the idea of eating breakfast was one of the scariest things I could have done, because I thought, well, if I start eating breakfast now and I still binge eat at night, that's going to probably double how many calories I eat in a day, which is going to make me get fat and it's going to make me lose all my progress. But I required myself. I said, the number one thing that I was scared of was eating breakfast. So that's what I have to do. clearly, if that's the thing I'm most scared of, and I know for a fact that eating breakfast isn't going to make me fat, I just know the science, then that's what I have to do. And that was the last day that I ever binged in my life. That was the last time I ever binged at this point about 10 years ago or so now. And it's so funny how literally just adding breakfast into my day was all that I needed in order to stop binging. But I think this is really important for me to clarify that from the day that I started intermittent fasting to the day that I stopped intermittent fasting was a period of, I don't know, about four to five years. And over those 4 to 5 years, I progressively got worse and worse and worse with binge eating. But here's the thing with that also. Over that time frame, I also got stronger. I also deadlifted 3 times my body weight. There were periods of time where I got to about 6 to 7% body fat. And if you go back and look at my content on my website and my social media from that time frame, it looked like I was doing great. It looked like I was, and in many aspects, I was doing great. I was learning. I was getting stronger. My business was growing. I was competing as a competitive powerlifter and really starting to make a name for myself. But all the while, seriously and severely struggling with my own nutrition, my own body image. And it's important for me to make this clear, because even when you're seeing other people posting about how well they're doing and how great things are going, you really don't know what's going on for each individual. You have no idea. And if the only thing you take out of this episode is a better and clearer understanding of knowing that regardless of what people are posting about, regardless of what people are putting on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, whatever, regardless of what people are telling you, everyone has their own struggle. And for you to really look at other people's content from that lens, it will allow you to be less hard on yourself. I think this is one of the most important things you can do, is to not be so damn hard on yourself, because we all have our own struggles. We're all going through stuff. And the reality is, the better you get at overcoming your struggles, the better you get at allowing your struggles to develop your strengths, then the better you'll end up on the other side. And keeping in mind, again, it took me about 4 to 5 years from start to finish of intermittent fasting to get over my binge eating. 4 to 5 years. And most people, they just assume to end it in a day or a week or a month. But that's just not how it works. It takes time. Now, I'll talk about something else as well. Just, it's funny, as I think about it, one of the things I also used to do in high school, and now this is actually very interesting because I didn't even realize this was also very binge restricty, but my buddy David and I, we did a lot of our nutritional experimentation together. But one of the things that was very popular when I was in high school in about 2006, 2007, reading on tnation.com and a lot of the big websites of that era, was this idea of cheat days. And I still think that they're pretty popular nowadays and that there are many people pushing them. But I remember when they first started to come out as something at all, like when they first appeared in general in the fitness industry. And they were very, very enticing. In the same way that intermittent fasting was enticing, intermittent fasting was enticing because basically on any given day, you could save all of your calories for a certain time period and eat as much as you wanted. Cheat days were similar in that you could have an entire day every week to eat as much as you wanted of whatever you wanted, as long as you were rigidly strict the rest of the week. Now, I will say this, there are some people who this works very well for, in the same way that there are many people who intermittent fasting works well for. But just because it works well for some people doesn't mean it works well for everyone, and it doesn't mean it works well for you. I remember, I will never forget, when my buddy David and I started incorporating cheat days into our nutrition, and we would plan them every week. Every week we would sit down and we would plan the next cheat day. And we would sit down together and we would write down what foods we were going to eat, what restaurants we were going to go to. We would always go to the restaurant in Massachusetts. It was one of those like grimy ass buffets. It was called Super Buffet in a town called Marlborough. And basically you could go and for about, I think it was like $14.99, you could eat as much as you wanted, which was really like the the binge eater's ultimate dream, where you could just go and eat as much as you wanted for like $15. And I did this for a long period of time as well, in which I would have these massive, massive cheat days. The interesting thing and part about it, though, is I was unbelievably rigid and strict throughout the entire week. And I mean, so meticulously on point with my calories, with my protein, I calorie counted. But the whole idea was, okay, count your calories during the week, track them meticulously, hit your protein, hit your workouts, and then one day a week, you can do whatever you want. And I was like, well, that's amazing. Of course I'll do that. But I actually, my body composition got worse almost immediately from that, because what most people don't realize is how much they can actually eat in one day. And I remember having General Tso's chicken and pizza and ice cream and all this stuff all day. It was a whole day affair, which, I mean, nowadays there's no way I could do it. I just don't have the time. But when you're in high school and you get all the time in the world, why not? So that was another one of the stupid things that I did, one of the big mistakes that I made for a long period of time that definitely also contributed to my binge eating issues. Another issue that I had, especially as I started to dig more into nutrition and a lot of the myths and fallacies around it, there was a period of time where I was obsessed with organic foods. I was outrageously obsessed with organic, and everything that I was reading was telling me that organic was optimal, organic was premier, and anything not organic was just essentially poison. And I feel so bad about this now, because I don't know how much you know about me. I've spoken about this a little bit before, but I did not grow up with much money at all. I did not grow up in a very wealthy household. My mom worked often multiple jobs in order to support us. We didn't have a much disposable income, I should say. And when I started to get really, really, really into nutrition, and I had this phase in which I thought organic was everything, I feel so bad looking back, because I would fight tooth and nail with my mom, essentially demanding that she buy everything organic. Meanwhile, I had no concept of how much things cost. I had no concept of how much time and effort she was working to make money, to put food on the table, to make sure that I could do the things I needed and wanted to do. I had no idea, no concept of it whatsoever. I was a kid, and how could I? But I remember just fighting with her, and looking back now, I know for a fact that if she could have, she would have. And she tried in many ways. She tried to buy organic milk. She tried to buy organic eggs. She tried to buy organic fruits. But it was impossible for her to buy organic everything. And I just remember resenting her and being angry with her about it. And I don't regret much in my life. There's not much that I regret or that I wish I could take back. But this is definitely one of the things that I wish I could take back. Because I can't imagine how much it hurt her to have to argue with me about that, knowing that she couldn't afford it and knowing that she really wanted to provide that for me. One of the reasons I wanted to talk about this right now is because I still think there's a tremendous amount of misinformation regarding organic foods. I think there's an overwhelming amount of misinformation regarding organic foods. And this is one of the biggest areas of conflicting misinformation. And I guarantee I'll get a lot of hate for this, but it's the truth, and I have to say it. Organic foods are not inherently better for you, and they are not inherently safer for you at all. The research on that right now is overwhelmingly clear. Now, I'll say this. If research comes out eventually and shows that it is without question, without a shadow of a doubt, that organic foods are healthier and safer for you, then I will, without question, make an amendment to this. But I want to like really make sure everyone understands, I used to be on the side that organic was inherently better because I was looking at all of the most up-to-date, well-performed research. But as more and more research came out, it's become acutely obvious that organic foods do not hold higher nutritional value. They are not inherently safer for you at all. And anyone saying that it is definitive that they do either is ignorant and isn't as well versed in the research as you would believe, and or they have a marketing agenda and they're fear mongering. And again, I'll say this, if research comes out showing that it is definitively safer, I will make an amendment to this. But as of right now, that research is not there. It doesn't exist. And I want to make this clear because coming from firsthand experience, knowing that number one, organic food is significantly more expensive than non-organic food. I don't want anyone to feel like they're poisoning their family or poisoning their children just because they might not be able to afford organic. You don't need to afford organic. If you want to pay the extra money for it, by all means, go for it. I have no issue with that. If that's what you'd prefer, all the power to you. But the fact is, the scientific fact is that to date, there is no conclusive research showing that organic foods are inherently healthier or safer than inorganic foods. And that is currently a fact. If more research comes out saying otherwise, I will happily amend that statement. But what this all boils down to really is do what works best for you. If you'd prefer to buy organic, by all means, buy organic. If you'd prefer not to, you don't have to. I could afford organic foods if I wanted to right now. That wouldn't be an issue for me, very fortunately. But I still don't buy organic just based on the scientific data and evidence showing that it's not necessary. It's not essential. So there's that. Now, I'll end this with a discussion on supplements. I'll tell you during this what supplements I prefer now, but I'll start by saying I have a very interesting history with supplements. Number one being that I used to think that protein powder was steroids, and a lot of this was fueled by my mom. I remember when I was in high school wrestling, my buddy Justin Gibbs, he started drinking protein powder because of his older brother, Elliot, who is a tremendous wrestler. And I remember being like, oh my God, those are steroids. And my mom was like, yeah, those are steroids. You shouldn't have them. And I got super scared of this. It was Designer Whey. It was called Designer Whey protein powder. And if there's anyone who had protein powder back in like 2005, 2006, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This was the most disgusting protein powder you've ever tasted in your life. Like I literally used to have to hold my nostrils closed as I drank this protein powder. And it was just awful. But I remember when I first saw Justin and his brother Elliot having it, I was thinking, oh my God, like these are steroids. I can't believe they're just taking steroids. And I went over to Justin's house once because we used to cut weight for wrestling competitions in his hot tub. And he was having a protein shake. And I was super curious about it. I was like, what's that? And his mom was very nice and she was very well educated on it. And she explained it's just another way to get your protein in if you're not getting enough through your food. And it was actually very helpful during wrestling when you're trying to cut weight, because if you couldn't have a really big meal, it was a great way to get your protein in for very few calories without having a massive meal. So Mrs. Gibbs was a very nice woman and I trusted her. So I remember I got my first ever protein shake at Justin Gibbs' house. And they packed some up for me in a baggie, like a plastic baggie. And it was the strawberry Designer Whey. So it was a slightly pink powder. They put it in a baggie for me so that I could have some when I got home. And I remember when I got home, my mom was like, what is that? Like, she thought I just had a bag of powder. She's like, what are you holding? And I was like, it's a protein shake. And she lost it. She called Mrs. Gibbs. They had a whole big thing where she was like, did you give him steroids? And then Mrs. Gibbs explained it to my mom. And finally, my mom came around to it and she did her own research. But initially, I thought protein powder was essentially steroids, which thankfully it's not. But from there, once you get into protein powder and supplements, it's very easy to get reeled in by the marketing. And I remember, I mean, I'll tell you straight, very straightforward. When I was in high school, I spent thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars on completely and utterly useless supplements. I wasted so much money at GNC and Vitamin Shoppe on supplements that were just completely and utterly unnecessary. I like cringe at the thought of how much money I actually wasted. Realistically, just based on how often I was buying supplements and how much I would buy and the different types of supplements I would buy from GNC and Vitamin Shoppe and whatnot, and the frequency with which I would buy them, I'd say that between probably sophomore year of high school and freshman year of college, I don't think it's an overestimation to say that I did at least $10,000 of supplements over that time frame, which is just like, God, I would love to have that right now. That would be way better put into a savings account. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so adamant about making sure people know supplements are not essential, especially a lot of the things that they put in those glass cases in the back of the store, and they have like a lock and key to make it look extra special, and they've got like triple X ultra fat burner bullfrog whatever, like all these things that are just, they seem outrageously beneficial and whatnot, but most supplements are a complete and utter waste of time, and I've always stood by that. I will say, and I think this is important, people do ask me, do I take any supplements? Yes, I do. And which supplements do I recommend? Well, I'll say this. As of right now, the majority of supplements that I take are a multivitamin, vitamin D, I take fish oil, and then I take just random protein powders. Now, I get all of my supplements from Legion Athletics. I'll put a link in the show notes to the website where you can go and see not only the supplements they have, but my personal favorite options from Legion. There are two major reasons I use Legion supplements. The first one is they are one of the only supplement companies that are 100% forthright and honest with all of their ingredients in their supplements. Many supplements, and I'm sure you've probably seen this, use what's called a proprietary blend, okay? And when they say they have a proprietary blend, they don't actually tell you what all of the ingredients are within the supplement, which I personally detest. I don't like that. I think it's not fair. I don't think it's right. And candidly, I think it can be a little bit scary depending on where you're getting your supplements from. Legion is one of the only supplement companies that will actually tell you exactly what ingredients are in the supplements and in what quantities they are. So that's incredibly important for me. The other major reason that I'm very supportive of Legion is because I'm actually very good friends with their owner, Mike Matthews. I think he's a very, very good guy. I think he's a great businessman, very honest businessman, and I support him. And like I always try and support all of my friends, I support him as well. Sort of like I support my friend Mike Vacanti, and whenever people ask me what calorie counting app I use, I always say Mike's Macros. Number one is because I think it's a tremendous application that I think everyone should download, but also because I support my friends, and I think Mike Vacanti is a tremendous coach, and I would support him in everything he does. So if you are looking for supplements, I think Legion is a great option. I'll put the link to that in the description. Also, while I'm at it, I'll put a link to Mike's Macros calorie counting app in the description as well, in case you're interested. But on the subject of supplements, just to reiterate, I'm not a big supplement guy. I don't think they are essential for your progress. And it's even like sort of embedded within the name, right? They're supplements. Supplements are supplementary. And I've always said, if you don't have your training in check, and if you don't have your nutrition in check, and you don't have your sleep in check, then, and you're spending money on supplements, you're wasting your time. And this isn't an and or scenario. This is an and scenario. If you don't have your training in check, if you're not training at least 3 times a week, and you're not being at least 80% consistent with your nutrition, and you're not getting at least 6 to 8 hours of sleep a night, if those three all aren't met and you're supplementing, if you're wasting money, you're spending tons of money on supplements, you're wasting your time and money, because they're the minutia. They're the small little things that only matter as long as everything else is taken care of first. All right, I think I've done enough rambling in this episode. Let me just get to the point. The reason I made this episode is because I want you to know I have made every single mistake in the book. I've believed in every myth, every fallacy. I've tried every supplement. I've tried it all. I've believed it all. I've done it all. I've made all the mistakes you could possibly make, and then some. And if nothing else, I hope what this does is it shows you that making these mistakes is all part of the process, and it will lead you to getting better. Because if I hadn't made those mistakes early on, I wouldn't be where I am today. It's one of the things that I've always found very interesting about human nature is, despite any struggle or hardship that you go through, the vast majority of time you always look back and say, you know, I wouldn't change it, because if it wasn't for that struggle, if it wasn't for that hardship, I wouldn't be who I am today. And that's very much what I think about everything, all of the mistakes that I've made in the fitness industry. If it wasn't for the mistakes I made with intermittent fasting, if it wasn't for the mistakes that I made with organic food, if it wasn't for the mistakes that I made with my relationship with food, if it wasn't for the mistakes that I made with supplements and protein and wasting thousands and thousands of dollars, if it wasn't for all of those mistakes, I wouldn't be where I am today, and I wouldn't be able to help as many people as I do today. So if nothing else, embrace the mistakes that you've made, embrace the mistakes that you're making, and embrace the mistakes that you will make going forward, because they're going to help you, and they're going to allow you to become a better, smarter individual and develop a healthier relationship with yourself. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. It would mean the world to me. Have a wonderful day. Talk to you soon.